Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. One of these days, I'm going to change the name of this show to Roger Badish. It's Your Life and Times, because there's not a month that goes by where someone doesn't come in here and Roger will come in and say, "Oh my God, we used to drive race cars together. We used to teach together. We used to be in radio together." I am very fortunate to have in here a former colleague of Roger's at Evanston Township High School, Mark Larson, who I have known, I think, longer than Roger Badish. I worked with his dad and have known Mark for a good long while. His new book is a remarkable, remarkable accomplishment. It is called Ensemble, An Oral History of Chicago Theater. It is 700-some pages, more than 300 interviews gathered together in an unbelievably compelling way that tells you, whether you're new to Chicago theater or you've been hanging around since the early days of Second City and Playwrights Theater, it tells you stuff you didn't know. Mark, congratulations. This is, I know you've been working on it for a long time. 4 years? 5 years?
4.5 years.
4.5. It's like a little kid. How old are you, little boy? I'm 4.5. You write in your wonderful preface, the Chicago theater movement and I are about the same age, if you mark its inception, as I do in this book, with the founding of Playwrights Theater Club in 1953, a number of starting points you could have selected. Why did you select Playwrights Theater? And tell people what it is.
Playwrights Theater Club was a group that was gathered by Paul Sills when he was in college at the University of Chicago, and he gathered together people who were interested in doing theater, and they were frustrated by the fact that there was no theater at a theater department at mm-hmm. the University of Chicago, so they did it on their own, and they called it Playwrights Theater Club.
Chicago theater at the time was basically consisted of shows coming from Broadway, going on the road, and one of their stops would be Chicago. That's not a sort of a nurturing environment for theater folk, is it?
No, and it certainly wasn't. That was basically it. Those touring companies and some summer stock. So Sills started this group, and I wanted to mention the names that were part of Playwrights Theater Club. Fritz Weaver, Ed Asner, Mike Nichols, Elaine May, Joyce Piven, Burn Piven. It was remarkable. Barbara Harris.
Well, that had a ripple effect not only on local theater, but on the national scene. You have some of them. There are, ladies and gentlemen, more than 300 fascinating people interviewed in this book. I found the Asner stuff just terrific. How did you find him? Not physically find him. I mean, obviously, we know where he can be located. But how did you find him?
You know, somebody helped me. I can't tell you who.
Okay.
But somebody who knew him said, "I can put you in touch." And he responded very positively. And I flew out to California and met with him at his home in Tarzana and had several subsequent conversations with him.
Most of these people you interviewed face-to-face?
Most of them. That's what I tried to do.
Yeah.
There's a fair amount that are by the phone.
Oh, just of because course. It was, yeah. Just because some of them have become big stars. Now they're big stars. Yeah. You got into the oral history racket, is what I'll call it, not that long ago when you were working on another book, right?
Yeah. A book that failed, actually. It didn't. It never came to completion. I finished it, but it wasn't published.
Yeah, well, that's the nature of contemporary publishing. Don't kid yourself. How did you were inspired because you were part of his books as well by Studs Terkel, of course, the great and arguably the, I'm not going to call him the father of oral history, but certainly the person that put oral histories on the map.
He certainly did.
How did he inspire you?
Oh, my gosh.
What was it like? I've done it, but what was it like to sit with Studs? I mean, you obviously learned many of the things I learned, but what vibe did you get off Studs and his manner of doing? You know, the oral interview too often, especially sadly taught in school sometimes, is, well, write down 10 questions and then ask the 10 questions and record the answer and there it is. That's not the Terkel-Larson method, is it?
No. You combined our names. That was lovely. I've been interviewed by students sometimes, and they come in with their 10 questions. And the problem with it is they just go from question to question to question. And what Studs does is he very much engages you in a conversation. It's very much a conversation like you do. And I would be interested in what you got from him. What I got from him, we sat twice on his couch on Castlewood Terrace.
Sure.
And we, his hearing was so bad, he'd lean into me, just to be able to hear. But it was like three and a half hours. And what I found really interesting and what I didn't expect was how infrequently he asked questions.
Exactly.
Did you experience that?
Exactly. Yeah. It was a conversation. I mean, I'll give you that Studs really, really liked to talk. There's no question about it. He'd go on and on and on and on and on and on. But he also listened intently so that there were no, sort of like, how are you? And he'd go on from there. Most people, Mark, I have to think, how did you present yourself? How did you present yourself to them? Because a lot of these people are, quote, famous, unquote, and busy, 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 and are asked to do sort of interviews about a variety of things all the time. How did you present it, and what were some of the reactions?
One of the things that absolutely fascinated me about this was how open everybody was and how quick they were to say yes. I did not anticipate that at all.
Why do you think that is? I'm very curious about that. I mean, for many of them, it was the chance to relive their youth.
Yeah.
And a very, very exciting time in their lives. That had to be part of it, yes?
I think in retrospect, it was. And they knew that's what they were going to be interviewed about. After a little while, too, once I got a few people, I was able to write to them and say, I've talked to Alan Arkin, I've talked to Ed Asner, and I'd love to talk to you so that they feel like they're in good company. But I would present what the project is about and, usually in an email.
You had to, with each one of them, given whatever specific time they were active, had to do a considerable amount of research on, Playwrights Theater. Hello, you were born in 53. Playwrights Theater was born in 53. Was that enjoyable for you?
I loved it. Yeah. And the more, here's another thing about 1953, actually, in relation to research. I was going to start it in the 70s when you started getting Steppenwolf,
right?
Remains Theater, and those folks, the Remains that you love.
Yeah,
so much.
Yeah. I want to talk about Remains a bit.
But I met Joyce Piven, and what I was going to do was an interview with her about her workshop that started in the 70s.
Sure.
And in preparation for that, I read her book, and there was all this material at the beginning about Playwrights Theater Club. And then I sat down with her, and it totally changed the scope of the book.
How early on was that in this 4.5 years?
I'd say about 6 months to a year in there.
Wow. Wow.
It was pretty early, but it changed everything.
Let me ask you, more than 300, how many hours of interview? You had everything professionally transcribed. I know that.
Uh-huh.
How many hours of interviews would you estimate that you had? You still have them somewhere, right?
I still have them, yeah. I wish I knew. I have no...
Thousands.
I have no clue.
One of the people that must have been terribly helpful to you, and here is what you write and he says, as another point where one could have started this book: it would be hard to overstate the influence a Second City has had not only on Chicago theater but on American entertainment coast to coast. In a 1994 retrospective commemorating the theater's 35th anniversary, Chicago Tribune critic Richard Christensen reflected on its mark in the city. All dates of recent Chicago history can be traced to the birth of Second City. Do you agree with that?
I do, if you consider 1953 and Playwrights as the inception.
Yeah.
And Second City is the birth.
In a way, Playwrights gave birth to Second City. That's what many of the people in the book think, too.
Yeah.
What was it like to talk to Richard? I saw him not long ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I'm going to see him next week, actually.
Good.
We're going to give him a book.
Richard was as influential would you agree with nurturing Chicago theater in its really early stages, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and because you know him well, it's hard to get that out of him.
Oh, no, of course, yeah. Yeah, he's a relatively self-effacing
critic. He's very self-effacing,
critic.
Very modest.
For a critic, he's incredibly for self-effacing, yeah.
But he, yeah, I brought him a bunch of emails that people sent me because I said, I'm going to go see Richard. What do you want me to tell him? And one of the things I said was, you know, people keep telling me, you really nurtured this thing along and the stuff that you were just saying.
Yeah.
And he said, well, good for them.
That's perfect, yeah. Richard Christensen.
Just put it into it right there.
We have to take a short break, but we'll continue on for another half hour with Mark Larson talking about his remarkable book, Ensemble, an Oral History of Chicago Theater. If you've ever been to the theater, if you have ever thought of going to the theater, you should buy this book. Welcome back. We're talking with Mark Larson about his remarkable book. I don't throw that word around a lot. The book is Ensemble, an Oral History of Chicago Theater, 4.5 years in the making, 300 plus interviews, and close to 700 pages in length, but it reads so fast because it is so many voices coming at various things from so many different angles. I would be so remiss if I didn't ask you what a treat it was to talk to Mike Nussbaum.
It was a great treat.
Mike is now in his 90s. Yeah. He has been in Chicago theater for a great portion of his life, and he is still on the top of his game.
Yeah. Yeah, he was just in Hamlet at Chicago Shakespeare Theater.
I know.
Yeah.
He must have been a treasure trove for you.
Oh, he's certainly done a lot of interviews, as you can
sure.
imagine.
Oh, sure.
And he's got so many stories. Going back, what I was most interested in, because I had followed him more recently, but the stuff about working with Bob Sickinger at Hull House Theater,
yeah,
you know, was really fascinating.
See, you
to
have
me.
Captured a lot of stuff in this book, Mark Larson, that someone trying to do a similar project, though they never will, in 5 years, would not have been able to get a lot of this stuff. I mean, you realize that there are certain people we all have a lifespan. What was there anything, Mark? I know you taught at Evanston Township High School, written a couple books, taught for a little while at National Lewis, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, you almost became someone who would be interviewed for a book like this, didn't you?
Well, that's kind. I would say I was.
You had the chance to become someone
that's
who
so
would,
much better.
Would have been interviewed for this.
You made
book.
It sound like I was inches away. no, I gave it a shot, and it was in the 70s.
How?
I wrote a play that Victory Gardens did. Bill Norris, remember Bill Norris?
Very well, the greatest Scrooge in history.
He's incredible,
to my mind.
He's in the book too, as a matter of fact.
I know.
He called me up one day, and he found my play in a pile of plays that showed up at Victory Gardens, and so I did that. And then I wrote a children's play with a friend of mine, Rusty Steiger, that we wrote in college, and Second City did it. And in the lead role was George Wendt.
Wow.
And so, not that led me anywhere.
Good old South Sider.
Yeah, the South Sider.
Led to a staff writing job on Cheers.
Yes, right. You know, nobody knew who he was.
What did you find attractive about the theater at that time as a young man? What was it?
I'd always been interested in the theater since I was a kid.
Yeah.
I just fascinated by it. And then when I got to high school, I got in the theater department right away. And, you know, it's the corny thing. I was always doing plays for my parents and all that kind of stuff.
That's great. Good kid. I literally could interview Mark for the next 24 hours, but we don't have that kind of time. I'm just telling you that you name a theater company that has been in this town, and you will have not only a take on it, but real insight into it. I'm very curious and was enlightened by some of the sections on the African-American theater in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Give me, if you can, a sort of summation of the start and the struggles of You know, and then we get to the Jackie Taylor Black Ensemble Theater on Clark Street. It was tough at first.
It was tough at first. But there was a lot going on the South Side. I tried to make that clear.
Yeah.
It was kind of, I was just looking at an interview I had with Pamela Rami, who was talking about when he was at Stateway Gardens, when he lived there as a kid, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And there was so much culture there, and there was so much going on. And he ended this one little section that I had on him by saying, that's the environment I grew up in.
Well, the same could be said of musically of, you know, Curtis Mayfield
exactly
and Cabrini Green, for goodness sake. No, that was very enlightening to me, as was the beginning of the crazy, crazy, wonderful organic theater. Another, I am interviewed in the book, full disclosure, on a number of different topics. Chapter 5, and this was I have always considered a seminal moment for Chicago theater, was the success of Grease that started in the most modest fashion one could imagine.
Right. Well, one of the things that I got from you that I really enjoyed was you were there, and you were there a number of times because you had a buddy in it.
Yeah, I had my father's assistant was in the show, as was my high school best friend's little sister, Polly Penn, who was also interviewed in this thing. Grease changed the landscape in a number of different ways, not like a earthquake, but I think it... And you detail it in the book, it started to a sense of, wow, there may be some kind of success at the end of our crazy theater road.
Something could happen, yeah. I don't know that there was a lot of thought about that before, too.
Yeah.
And Grease, you know, when you look back on it now, happened so rapidly. It went to New York. It was at a smaller theater. It quickly moved to Broadway. And then, you know, you talk to Jim Jacobs, who wrote it. That's pretty much the main thing that he wrote, and he's been living off of that for his whole life.
Oh, my God, of course. You've got, you know, live Grease. The durability of Grease is also astonishing to me. And it's sort of based on Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey's adventures at Taft High School.
Yeah.
And it started in a barn, a former trolley barn.
It's a trolley barn, yeah.
With, you know, sets made out of cardboard. Yeah, the quick success of Grease has always astonished me. And again, Mark Larson talks to everybody involved. Polly Penn, who sort of got the offer to go to New York and decided, well, maybe she'd go to college instead. Yeah. That could have changed the arc of her career.
She reflects on that, too.
I know.
Which is really interesting to me.
You know, of course, Mark, in the book, I go first to myself.
you check the index.
Egomaniac that I am and see what I had to say. Then I looked up my father's name. Then I looked up people I knew, and I knew plenty. I mean, I've spent a lot of my life as a kind of theater groupie. One other fantastic story in here, and there are... out of the hundreds of people Mark Larson interviewed, an equal number of fantastic stories. it is when Joe Mantegna, late of Criminal Minds and a great actor, and one of the powers behind Bleacher Bums, which was another famous seminal hit, talks about reading American Buffalo for the first time.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. He says... David, he was at the Organic, and we did the original reading of American Buffalo for Dave, myself, Jack Wallace, and Brian Hickey. He gave us typewritten sheets. I played Teach. Donnie Hickey played Bobby. The three of us read American Buffalo so Dave could hear it. We had other members of our company there to hear it, too. At the end, Dave said, yeah, that's nice. that's nice. That play won for David the Pulitzer Prize. David didn't want to talk for the book, did he?
He said he threw an assistant.
Yeah.
This is one of the few assistants I
had to go
through.
Pam Susamel, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, David's a screenwriter now, too, yeah.
Yeah. She said he really doesn't do a lot of interviews now, and but he'll answer 10 questions that if you write them out.
Yeah.
And no follow-up.
Yeah.
And so it became very kind of cryptic.
That's too bad, because David's a good interviewer. I've known him for a long time, but he doesn't do them anymore for a variety of reasons. One chapter late in the book haunts me. There is a chapter about AIDS and how AIDS changed everything. And I want to talk about that after the break. There's also a lovely, lovely chapter, chapter 33, about Martha Levy. Mm. Who was Martha Levy?
Martha Levy was the artistic director at Steppenwolf Theater. I think she had a huge influence on... I thought you were going to take a break.
No. A couple of minutes.
Gary Sinise, Terry Kinney, and Jeff Perry had started it.
Yeah.
And this was kind of the new guard now.
Yep.
And what was it going to become, you know, in the new world? And Martha really marshaled that, I think.
Yeah. And she was also, I mean, she was also an actress of grand talent. I first fell in love with her on stage.
Yeah.
But that is a lovely chapter. You couldn't have intended to make that. I mean, you couldn't have plotted out that chapter. It just happened, didn't it?
Yeah, that's a great observation. It just happened. I kept talking to as many people as I could who had remembrances of her. And, you know, when you look at, you know, how Bruce Norris, for example, or
sure.
Tracy Letts reacted, it wasn't overly sentimental, too. I didn't want it to be an overly sentimental thing. They were pretty straightforward about their... But there was also a great respect there. So,
no question.
It just, I felt very happy once I finally got it.
I'm so glad that chapter is in here. Now we have to take a break. Want to get a commercial in here, Dan, and then I'll read the news? Okay. Thank you, Roger Bettish, a former colleague of my guest, Mark Larson, who is the author of Ensemble, an Oral History of Chicago Theater. Do not be at all intimidated by its size. It reads, you know, it's one of these books that you can dip into almost anywhere. It's roughly organized chronologically with a number of surprising chapters throughout. You also somehow convinced, and I remember reviewing these kids, Brad Hall and his now relatively famous wife, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, to write the foreword. How did that happen? I mean, because she's busy.
She's really busy. I was thinking about who do I want to have do this. I've always loved the practical theater
story. Oh, they were fantastic.
And we were running out of time, and I turned to my wife, Mary, and I said, who should we do? And she said, you should ask Julia. And so I wrote to Brad that same day and heard back from him in a half hour. I was really surprised.
They did
a beautiful job.
Yeah, you know, they did a wonderful job. There were a couple, you know, kids at Northwestern when they met, fell in love, and started a very, very funny theater company before they all got plucked out because they were incredibly talented. I would be so remiss, and it is a big part of this book, Mark Larson, to not mention a theater company that a lot of people, even devoted theater people in Chicago, have forgotten now. Mm. Remains was really something, and you devote a considerable amount of space to it, and not just because Billy Peterson is one of the founders either.
Yeah, and Amy Morton.
And Amy Morton.
It's an amazing group of people. Donnie Moffitt.
Yep.
Gary Cole. Maybe it's long, too, because I love the story. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, sure.
But I love the story of Remains because they were so feisty, and they were so rambunctious to do this. And Amy even says that, I think, at the near the end of the chapter. She said, God, it was fun.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, they did bold work. They were, for a long time, a kind of itinerant theater group that played in various places. And you know, I think I'm in there sort of talking about it. Yeah. I think its downfall was when they tried to institutionalize and get their own building and have a subscription base. But I know there are a lot of you out there who remember more than fondly Remains. And then Billy came back from Hollywood and did an American Buffalo and made them enough money to keep surviving. Red Orchid is another fascinating theater company to me. It's got one of the smallest theaters in town. It's very successful. It's Billy Peterson as Michael Shannon, who has gone on to have some career. I was watching, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood Saturday night, and there in the previews, there he is in another movie. Red Orchid's an unusual place, isn't it?
It really is. And it's not just because of Michael Shannon, though.
Oh, my God, no, sure.
this was a place that really wanted to do, like a lot of the others,
yeah.
wanted to do the kind of work that they wanted to do. And they really adhere to that. You know, they're not trying to, it's like Remains in a way. We're not going to try to market this to, you know.
Right. We're not.
This is the work that we really want to do.
Well, that's something that comes through like a wonderful, wonderful thread through the fabric of your book, is the passion and commitment that these people have for Chicago theater. I think you start the book with a quote from Amy Morton. In Chicago, we weren't going to get rich and we weren't going to get famous, so we just got good. That, in essence, is it not, is the theme of this book.
It really is. That's why I used it as an epigraph. I was so glad that she had said it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the theme. That's not to say there isn't this part of people that wants to
be successful, pay their bills.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, there is
right.
a part that wants to pay their bills, but I couldn't agree with that more. Let me ask you before I kick you out of here. What in all of this conversation with all these grand talents and about all these various plays, is there something, if you could go back in time and go to the opening night of a specific show, do you know what it would be?
It's hard to make it just one.
Sure.
It's a wonderful question. All sorts of things happened in my mind when I heard it. I'd love to have seen the original True West. I'd love to have been there. I'd love to have seen Warp, Balm and Gilead. You know,
yeah.
I'd love to have sat on a milk crate at Kingston Mines and seen Grease like you did.
Yeah, but yeah. In a way, what you've done is you've brought yourself back to those very, not opening night, but you brought yourself back to those productions. And Ensemble, an Oral History of Chicago Theater, will bring anybody who reads it deep into Chicago history. You will feel as if you were there when Joe Mantegna was reading American Buffalo to David Mamet off a bunch of typewritten pages. Mark, I cannot tell you, my admiration for you has always been high. I didn't know about the Roger Badish connection, but so it's higher still for that. But this book is really a remarkable document, and it will live forever. And 10 years from now, you can add some chapters at the back. Again, it is Ensemble, an Oral History of Chicago Theater. It's got everybody in here. Laurie Metcalf, John Mahoney, David Schwimmer, Jim Belushi, Ed Asner, Billy Peterson, and Amy Morton, who used to be a couple. thanks, Mark. And
Rick,
much success.
You.
Do you have any signings or anything coming up?
Yes. There's actually the launch party is tomorrow.
Where?
At Jane Addams Hull House Museum.
That's right in the center of the University of Illinois Chicago campus, right on Halstead Street. You cannot miss it.
6 o'clock.
Congratulations, Mary. Thanks for coming in, too. The book's dedicated to Mary, among others. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you.